This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
We're much nicer down here.
And Karina Anglada.
Everything looks brighter, sunnier.
You know those rare individuals who can see the big picture, build the roadmap, and make magic happen? Well, we have one of them here on today's pod. Jazz Brathett is a creative leader and visionary currently working with the Atlanta Hawks. She is multifaceted and has some of the greatest insights on storytelling, producing, editing, and crafting the best content. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Karina, are you on Time That Is?
Yep.
05.
Our janky sync procedure that's not really needed.
Yeah, you are really trying to start when I started.
Oh, I was looking at the time. I wasn't looking at you.
Oh, great. Well, maybe you're behind. Or maybe I'm behind. Who knows?
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
We are so excited for this conversation. We've got Jazz Brathett, creative producer extraordinaire, currently working with the Atlanta Hawks. Jazz, thank you so much for joining the pod. We're excited to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to finally talk to y'all.
I know. So we're actually recording on a Sunday. It's a day off. And normally we dive into like career background and hearing about your journey. And I think we'll get to that. But I'm curious, like, is it a day off for you today? And what do you do in your time off?
This is my day off. And I'm really excited. So I'm going to the trail today. It's a really nice trail that I live by where people bike, run, walk. So it's very active on Sundays, especially. So I can't wait to get out there. But yes, Sundays when I'm not working a game, if it's not at home, catching up on my shows or playing video games or something, I'm usually outside on a trail.
I love it. And are you walking, biking? Do you have a preference of mode of transportation?
I'm running today. It seems so nice outside that I actually want to like get some miles in. So I'm gonna run today.
Yeah. That's awesome. Get the endorphins going. Now you mentioned it is an off day for you, but for folks that aren't familiar with your background, what is your role with the Hawks right now, and how did you get to your position where you are today?
Yeah, I'm a producer with the Hawks. I've been there for the past 4 seasons. So in my role, I'm responsible for a lot of the global partnerships, content, in arena content, and social media content that fans could see on the Hawks social channels. And a little bit of my background. So I've been working in sports since I graduated college in 2017. So I started working at the University of Pittsburgh in the sports department as a producer. So at the time, I was responsible for all of the Olympic sports. So that was creating videos for in arena, social media, and also doing some documentary storytelling.
At what point did you get started in sports or in creative? Were you... did you grow up knowing that you wanted to be a creative? Were you an athlete? Like, where did kind of your creative journey start?
I would say my creative journey started in high school. I was really into storytelling as the basis of everything. I was always a sports fan, grew up in the Midwest, so sports is like really important to us there. But in high school, I really took like the journalism approach. So I was working at the newspaper. I had my own sports column and I would just review games, actually NBA games. A lot of the times I would just like update people in the student newspaper. But eventually going to college and being around sports and just seeing how that was like the best way on campus to actually have a reason to have one of the cameras from our production department. I was just like, okay, I could story tell that way. Yeah, in college, it was really a trial and error time where I was able to shoot football games on campus, work for the marketing department on campus, and inform students about like new events on campus that way. But yeah, sports is really what interested me the most because I was able to be really creative with it, storytell, and get access to games for free too. So
that's always cool to be able to, yeah. You know, that's the one thing that I miss the most is going to all of the games without having to pay for them.
Yeah.
So you talk about being in college and you know, doing some of that. At what point did you know that you wanted to pursue it as a actual career? Or did you just kind of say, hey, graduate college, I just want to find a job? Like, when did that kind of click that this could be a career opportunity?
It clicked my senior year of college. I took a sports production class. And we interviewed students for our, like, senior project. I had to interview a couple of athletes at Georgia Southern University where I attended. I interviewed a tennis player and a track star. And it just really piqued my interest because I was able to, like, spend some time with them, understand their routines and what made them be, like, one of the best athletes on campus. I was able to film them and really tell their story in a different way where you can't really see or really grasp on paper like I was doing for the student newspaper at one point. And that just really just energized something in me. I started to research a lot and watch like 30 for 30s and like NFL film stuff on YouTube. And I became a nerd for it, honestly, of just like, oh my gosh, I could really storytell in this cool way, get close to the athletes and just show a different side of them rather than just, hey, he's a great tennis player because he wins a lot of matches. But no, he's from Mexico and his family brought him here. Or he actually left his family. One of the athletes I found, he left his family to get a degree at Georgia Southern University. And he was like one of the best tennis players on the team. So just telling his complete backstory just made me feel good. And I became addicted to the storytelling aspect of it. And that led me to wanting to work for Pitt. Because, again, I had the responsibility of all the Olympic sports. So that included volleyball, gymnastics, wrestling, swimming and diving. And I created content for their social media and their in-arena content. And then as well, when you work in college athletics, a lot of what you're creating is for the recruits. So now I had to learn how to storytell to recruits, you know? So it just combines so many different things of like marketing, storytelling, and just being like a sports fan, a sports fanatic that really just had me fall in love with the craft altogether.
Yeah, it's like knowing your audience is such a huge part of the job, right? And knowing who you're curating content for. And to your point, like recruiting is such a different audience than a fan, than might be the actual team. Do you have a favorite audience or type of project that you work on with your work currently with the Hawks?
I work on a lot of in-arena content. So a lot of that focuses on humor.
That's fun.
I love playing around with humor. I think I'm pretty funny. at least around the right people. And it's so cool to like edit something and work on something and the fans get to watch it in real time. Mm-hmm. And you get their reactions on, you know, if they understand your comedic timing of a certain edit, if you use a certain effect to get their attention and they actually like catch on and they're laughing, engaging, pointing at the screen, having conversations about the video that they just watched. Like, that's one of my favorite things, because a lot of what I create besides in-arena content is just on social media. So like the only time I understand how the audience feels about it is if I read the comments, but to actually see it in real time, it just, it hits different, and it's a great way to gauge who your audience truly is.
And the Hawks pretty much do it better, you know, than most people, if not all, in venue. Like you said, seeing it live is different than seeing it, you know, after the fact, but also knowing what your audience enjoys. Do you feel like the Hawks at this point, you know, after years of doing it the way that they have, they've kind of built the culture, but the fans kind of expect those type of elements now. So it's just pretty much just stacking on top of what has already been built at the Hawks.
I think so. The Hawks are known to be one of the best venues in sports, just purely off the entertainment factor. You know, we have a great in-arena team. They put on an amazing show before tip-off. Honestly, like, Hawks games are known to feel really Atlanta. So it's like that club feeling. You hear the music all the way from outside the building.
Yep.
You're going to see stars. You're going to see all the latest influencers and celebrities on the sideline.
Concerts.
We're going to play the best music. You know, it's a whole experience. So, yeah, definitely.
How much did your time at Pitt and working with Olympic sports that don't have huge crowds compared to, you know, a basketball or a football prepared you? Because that is I feel like everyone should get a start in Olympic sports so that, one, you appreciate the craft, but also if you can execute for the Olympic sports, the volleyball, soccer, swimming, tennis, lacrosse, if you can execute the craft for those sports, it should help you appreciate the opportunity to work football, basketball, baseball, mm-hmm. or whatever big sport it is. But do you feel like it prepared you for the moments of, you know, working for an NBA team?
It definitely did. Like, when I first started working in college athletics, I never, like, Georgia Southern, we didn't have a wrestling team. So at the time, I've never went to a wrestling meet or match, never went to a gymnastics meet or a swimming and diving meet. Like, that was kind of, it was really foreign to me. So to, like, I had to understand the audience that I was creating for. I had to not only be at the games and work and, like, get footage and everything, but I had to understand, okay, if I make a certain video to play in the middle of a meet, between a timeout or like in gymnastics when they switch to a different event, I have to keep them engaged and I have to understand who they are, you know, to create content for. So it's definitely helped me in my journey of working in the NBA, because we sort of do have a niche audience, but you also are catering to subgroups within that. So you have the families who are there for like a great family outing. You have the students who are from like the AUC or Georgia Tech who are just there for a good night, you know. And then you have like, we have a lot of fraternities and sororities here too. So it's like, I'm really like catering to different audiences, especially when it comes to certain content. So working at Pitt definitely has me appreciating where I am now. I can also tell a story on how I was the main videographer for Pitt Volleyball before they're like, who they are now is like, they're known to be like the Final Four, in the Final Four like every year now. But when I first got there, no one was coming to games. Like, no one was there. So when I had to film games and get highlights, you know, the coach was saying, hey, we can't use certain shots because it's empty seats.
Certain angles.
So I had to understand on how to create a highlight video at certain, like, filming certain angles and making for sure, like, you know, somebody's got to be back there if they make a score. I have to avoid this whole side of the arena and only shoot this at this certain angle and work with only these highlights because I have to show someone behind them. So it makes you appreciate when you get to go to an NBA game every other night and it's pretty packed.
Yeah.
No, it's more flexibility.
Yes. Like, that resonates so much because my first big girl job was with the Detroit Pistons that were really a struggling team. And I'm curious your take on almost like needing to cover the struggling teams because it forces you to be a little bit more innovative and creative. Mm-hmm. Like, what's your take on that? Like, did that set a foundation for your work as an editor, producer, like then thinking about how to craft the story?
Yeah, because I had to make it exciting, you know, especially when it comes to like the recruiting aspect of it. Like,
oh, yeah,
you know, so creatively, I had to rely more on my editing, you know, because it was like the shots. Yes, they scored, but I may not be able to use that shot because no one's in the footage. So how can I really elevate this video by editing? Is that different effects? Am I punching into a shot differently? Am I doing like these cool transitions to really engage with the audience or have the audience engage with the video? So that's when I really relied on how well to edit something if the footage wasn't necessarily helping me.
Yeah. And it's also hard when you're at a place that, you know, it can be a basketball team that doesn't have great crowds. It could be a baseball team or sometimes even a football team that doesn't have a great crowd. And there's always that we can't use that or do we have a footage with people in the crowd? It's like, you were there. You saw no one was in the crowd.
Yeah.
So that is, but it's something that, you know, if you can work around a bad team or a crowd that lacks, I often tell the story about, you know, in 2011 when I covered a football team that was 2-10 and we produced a show that was Emmy nominated because you can only control what you can control. And, you know, as people who cover sports, you know, sometimes we get emotionally attached to the thing and care more than we should. But sometimes we can't get more people in there, you know, especially if the team isn't performing, right?
Yeah. So
shout out to you for making it happen.
Yeah. And I would say during that time, that's when you really have to tap into storytelling too. If you're working for a bad team, it's like, we have to show personality pieces now. Because if a team is losing consistently, fans aren't really inclined to go to a game.
Absolutely.
But if you put out a personality piece and fans start, you know, attaching themselves to a certain player, or like, wow, he's really funny. Like, I want to go to a game just to see him play because I like him as a person. You know, now you're driving sales in a different way.
Yeah. Storytelling will help for sure. You know, sometimes it's injuries. Sometimes it's, you know, if you're in college, maybe you don't have the best athletes or they're really young. Like there's a lot that goes into, and sometimes other teams are just that much further ahead of you, right? And so I feel like the storytelling aspect can, a lot of times we focus on the hype pieces, right? Oh, the dunks and the, you know, huge kills and all that, in volleyball terms, kills. But we're not telling the story of who those individuals are or those teams. And so people don't have, like, we have the emotional attachment because we're, you know, covering practices and all that, but we're not telling the behind the athlete, like, story, who mm-hmm. this person is, what adversity, or, you know, how cool they are. Like, mm-hmm. For instance, there's an athlete at University of Texas right now who's huge. Like, she's really big into Legos. And, like, I think that that is a cool story. And mm-hmm. she's building, like, models and stuff out of Legos, which that's a story in itself. Like, you could almost do a series, a content series sponsored by Legos, where she's building a new thing. People would tune into that, especially kids, right? So what angle, but sometimes we're so tied into, well, what can bring us revenue? It's like,
yeah,
there's a million things that can bring in revenue, and the story can help do that.
Mm-hmm.
What is your favorite part about making the in-game content? Like I said, I've been to a Hawks game before, and it's from the time you step in the building to the end, win, lose, or draw, you're going to be entertained. What is your favorite part about that process?
Besides the fan reaction, I just love to show people my sense of humor in the videos that I get to create. I feel like a lot of the content is usually, like, you know, call to action, you know, B-roll music, sponsor, then it's out. But when I get to put my personality in a piece, I have a really good time with that. So I want to say that's one of my favorite things to do.
I'm curious, how do you balance your humor with a diverse audience crowd's humor? And also, maybe depending on how the team is doing at that given time, maybe there might not be as much, let's say, leeway for, like, those humorous pieces from a PR standpoint. Like, uh-huh. do you think about those things at times? Like, you're like, oh, this would be really funny, but just might not be good for the brand type thing. Have you ever been in those moments? And if so, what is that process like? And also, a secondary question, like, I would love to hear how you, like, craft everything, like, from start to finish, like, the steps that you take to build something to get that like comedic timing.
I really want to say the balance just comes from a lot of the content that we get of the players for those funny content pieces are shot during preseason. So it's kind of like we're just building off of what we already have. And a lot of our content isn't necessarily about the team's performance. So it kind of helps. Like, the in-arena content that we make is kind of takes you out of the game, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like we don't have to truly rely on, like,
more, you know, personality.
Yeah, it's more personality driven. So if the players have a funny, quirky moment, as I'm scrubbing through the footage, my intention is always to just try to elevate it or acknowledge it, like, you know, he made a funny joke. Let me highlight this in the best way possible. Is this cutting down the music so you could hear this funny one-liner he has? Or is this putting, like, an emote in the corner to be our signal to fans that, hey, this is funny? Or should I scale into his face if he makes a funny facial, you know, gesture or something? So.
Yeah, or like that's playing with really sound effects.
For. Yeah, playing like with sound effects. Yeah. So I try to do that a lot. Like, a video that recently played out the game, it was a real Mascots of Atlanta, which was a spoof on the Real Housewives of Atlanta. So we worked on a project a couple summers ago, I want to say. And I'm a Real Housewives fan. So I was able to use a lot of, like, the sound effects that you usually hear on a reality show to like right. emphasize moments or play around with timing of shots or, you know, certain things to really like, you know, have fun. It was really camp. It was really funny.
And, I love
you know,
that.
Things like that. So yeah, I try to use all of the sound effects, music, and just editing choices to really emphasize those funny moments.
I love that. For whatever reason, as you're describing this, I'm imagining like a player saying something funny and then adding like a frame hold, like a freeze mm-hmm. on that. And then adding like, you know, like the birds chirping, like uh-huh. awkward sound effect. Like for whatever reason, as you were describing that, like that yes. was kind of playing in my head. And the way you described like the reality television examples is so that's such a tangible example, I think, for all our listeners. I love that example. And also like I wish I was at that game so I could watch.
Yeah.
Because I know with yeah. the mascots that would have been super funny.
Yeah. It was three videos too. So we did like oh, a little wow.
like a series.
Yeah, we did a series and it featured all three mascots. Harry from the Hawks, Blooper from the Braves, and Freddie from the Falcons. So the three main mascots in Atlanta. So it was really fun. I'll let you see it for sure.
Was there any guest appearances by the collegiate mascots? I mean, Atlanta has a lot of mascots.
Or the Real Housewives. Did they see it?
Well, funny enough, at the time, Shamia, who's our in-game host, she was like our housewife, right? In the mix uh-huh. of all the mascots.
Got
well,
it.
This
yep.
year, she's like literally a housewife now on the Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh, stop. Are
so,
you serious?
Yeah. No, honestly.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So she was so good. She was a natural doing like the confessional portion. So her commentary really drove the whole piece. So it was really fun to work on.
I love it. Wait, which Housewives is your favorite? I have to ask.
Let's see. It's like I have favorites
like
for different
time
reasons.
Or like now,
because they fluctuate. Listen, right.
They do fluctuate.
These ladies, it's a lot going on. Okay, but my favorite city as of now is Salt Lake City, which is so interesting to me because I would have never thought. But mm-hmm. this past season was so hilarious. I love to laugh. So it was extremely funny to me. The housewives were producing themselves, which is like hit or miss sometimes, but they were hilarious this season. So
what, hold up, when you say they were producing themselves, like you mean
you can tell when some girls are manipulating situations.
Gotcha. Yeah, understood.
To
okay.
like agitate a different housewife.
Understood. Yep.
So like the thing within like the housewife fans, we're like, oh, she's producing this. Like she's producing this moment. So yeah, it's very interesting. But yeah.
Karina, understood. Who's your favorite housewife?
I don't have a favorite housewife. I know someone, their sister was on Orange County a while ago. I didn't watch that one. I have to say, because I haven't leaned in lately. But when I did, Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Yeah.
I mean, the nonsense was nonsensing. And like, it was incredible television. I did try to start Real Housewives of Salt Lake City like a couple months ago from the very beginning because I'm super behind.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it was
a lot.
It was a lot. And I was like, I feel behind. I need to get caught up. But yeah, I don't know what it is. Since moving to Georgia, I've like leaned into reality television a lot more than I did when I was living in the Bay. I don't know what that says about me or like the living situation, but I am a fan of reality drama. It's just, it's amazing. And like, to your point, I think it is almost healthy for creatives to watch reality television because from a production standpoint, you can identify when moments are produced or mm-hmm. not. And the editing is like the editing, I think, is something to be learned from. Like, clearly they take scenes and build. Mm-hmm. So do you, it sounds like in the example for the Real Housewives with the mascots video, you took that into your work, but are there any other things that you take from your day-to-day consumption into the work that you do?
I would say, like, watching the Real Housewives lately, you can tell when it's I want to say some cities have different production companies.
Sure.
So you can tell, like, different editing styles.
Oh,
it's like how they introduce certain people. Like, they use, like, it's kind of like when you go to an NBA game and they have, like, the player introductions. They kind of have, like, that similar thing for Housewives when they're, like, cutting to their scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always interesting to me. I want to say just compiling a story when you have multiple people talking about one single topic is always interesting to me. Like, if this big event happens, how are you bringing all these storylines to, you know, tell the full rounded scope of what this event is and why there's conflict within it is really interesting to me. But yeah, that's about it. Everything else is pretty. I mean, when it came to that Real Mascots of Atlanta piece, it was really the humor that I was tapping into and how to over-dramatize a moment. So that definitely helped me with the video that way, like that one.
How long did it take you, or are you still getting used to Atlanta culture? Like, Atlanta has, I mean, it is the city of culture like no other. Maybe New York, but New York has like 15 versions of that. Mm-hmm. Shout out to New York and Atlanta. But how long did it take you to adjust and get used to Atlanta not being from the South, not being from the state of Georgia? And we'll get into, you know, your roots and background a little bit more. But how long did it take you?
It took me a very long time, to be honest. Mm-hmm. When I first moved down here, it was a big culture shock. You know, because I'm coming from Illinois, Naperville, suburb right out of Chicago. Shout out. So when I moved to Georgia, it was just completely different. I know, like, I moved to Georgia my junior year of high school, and the kids knew I wasn't from here. They could tell very fast. And they were like, what is your, like, first impression? And I was like, it's so many trees. Like, I couldn't get over, like, the amount of trees that were here.
Wait, let's talk about this. When my family came to visit, they said, it's so green here. It's beautiful. The same thing. Everybody said the trees.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but no, that's so true, funny.
I was like, when I'm on the expressway, I expect to see buildings, stores, homes on the side. All I see are trees. When are we getting to, like, civilization? Like, I could not wrap my head around why it was so many trees. So yeah, that was a big thing for me. And yeah, it's totally different. Like, I used to come here for, like, family vacations, because my family had part of our family down here before we initially fully moved to Georgia. So it was seen as like a vacation thing, you know. But when you're living here full time, like, you fully immerse yourself into Southern culture, it's definitely different. And the music is different too.
We're much nicer down here.
I mean, both me and Jazz turned our heads.
That is a myth. Southern hospitality.
I don't think it's a myth. I think it's real. I think Southern hospitality is real. But I think it's funny, Jazz and I both come from Illinois, where I feel there's the Midwest nice. Like, that's a real thing. I will say Southern hospitality is a little different. And for me, to your point, Jazz, it took some getting used to, like, in my neighborhood now, people wave when you drive or they're walking down the street. And now if people don't wave, I'm like, like, they must not be from around here, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that isn't a thing that happens in Chicago. It's like a different way or you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not a myth, there is. But we got Midwest nice.
Yeah. Midwest nice and Southern hospitality are like so different.
They are.
Is so interesting, you know, the history of, you know, when you go back to the Great Migration, mm-hmm. is like, did people change when they went to the Midwest, or was it just an adjustment for them? That's a whole episode in itself.
That is a whole episode in itself. I have two cents, though. I feel like a big part of the geographic nature of a city can change the dynamic of the culture, right? In mm-hmm. New York, it's like people are going. They're trying to get from point A to point B. There's no time for most people.
Now you had
to stop and, huh?
I said, you said ain't no, then you're like, there's no time. I'm like, no, you had it right the first time.
Yeah, see, it was the southern, that's probably the southern side of it. But it's interesting, like I took a flight, a flight out of Atlanta Airport and was talking to one of the Delta reps, and I was with my partner, and we were trying to get our seat changed, and, you know, they were figuring things out, so we're small talking, and he's like, where are y'all from? And I was like, well, I'm from Chicago, he's from Alabama, and we had a whole discussion about how he's from New York, living in Georgia, and it's hard for him to date because he mm-hmm. feels like the women here think he's too aggressive, right? And mm-hmm. he thinks women here are a little more like too laid back, right? Which is so interesting. And again, we can get onto a whole another podcast episode.
You're just speaking facts, though.
Yeah.
It's so real.
It's, yeah. So it's
very, I don't know,
it's
whatever.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sure. Interesting mm-hmm. times.
But you talked about being from Naperville. There's a, you know, famous person from Naperville. Mm-hmm. You
may have very famous. High school. Mm-hmm. Jazz is the famous person, and
absolutely, you know. It's that person and Jazz. They're the only two famous people out of Naperville.
Yeah.
Did you grow up watching said player as an athlete?
Say her name, Darius.
No, I'm gonna let mm-hmm. her say her name. Was she like one of your like people that you looked up to? Did it give you inspiration, you know, going to the same hallowed halls of a athlete of that caliber?
The athlete being the Candace Parker from Naperville, Illinois.
Candace Parker. We love her. She's amazing.
I love Candace Parker. And yeah, she has definitely been an inspiration for me. I did not get to see her play at Naperville Central, the high school that she graduated from. I got to attend before my family moved to Georgia, but I still claim it. but yeah, like the moment that I think about when I was introduced to Candace Parker was, I had just moved to a new neighborhood, went to a new school at the time, and my mom saw I was having a tough time adjusting, mm-hmm. and she got like the Naperville magazine, or it's like Naperville Chronicle or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she was like, hey, it's this girl. Her name is Candace Parker. It says that her brother is in the NBA. She kind of looks like you, and da-da-da-da, she's from Naperville too. And look how well she's doing. Like, she's in college and all of this. And I was like, you know, I kind of like brushed it off or whatever. But then going to high school at Naperville Central, seeing her jersey in the hallway, seeing her trophies, understanding what she was doing and in college and with the Sparks, like, it always just inspired me to know that somebody who's also from where I'm from is doing amazing. You know, they got mm-hmm. to make it big time, and she always gives a shout out back to Naperville, and it feels great to know like somebody who understands where you're from has just been very successful, and it's kind of been like a barometer for me to like understand like Candace Parker was able to like leave Naperville and do amazing things, and I could do the same, and to see her now like as the president for Adidas. I think she produced the latest commercial that was out, like she was on set. You know, it kind of reminded me of being on set. So to like, just to see those So those parallels over the years has been really cool.
Absolutely. And we talk about, you know, representation, and, you know, some other letters are hot topics right now. But how important, like, you know, it's easy to say, oh, well, this person did it. Maybe there's a chance for me. But to actually, like, how big is representation of seeing someone come from the same neighborhood who not necessarily had to leave to find success, but was able to leave Naperville, go to Tennessee, do amazing, get drafted, you know, how amazing is it to see possibility, not even in sport, but that someone could come from the same place to, you know, have a great rise in whatever respective career that they choose.
It was huge. It was huge for me. It's still a big thing for me, because I want to be that person who's also from Naperville, who's like, I don't really know who else is from Naperville that's in the sports industry or in the film industry doing something. And if they see my name pop up, like, it's kind of like a, oh, there it is, you know? So to have that type of representation is very, very important.
You know, Jamie Foxx did a interview last week, and he was kind of being funny, but kind of being serious. And, you know, he was talking about how in 2008, how, yeah, he voted for Barack. But what that moment wasn't just about policy. It wasn't about the presidency. It was about the representation and how that changed everything for him, of how people even perceived him as a person, because you saw, you know, something that had never been done before, a black man being elected as president. Mm-hmm. Now everyone knows that there's nothing off the table now. You can be the CEO mm-hmm. of the biggest brand. You can be the CEO of the country. You can be the CEO of your own brand, but just the importance of seeing it happen and all of the walls kind of being broken down. Who were some of the other influences for you, maybe not from Naperville, but growing up, who was a huge inspiration and influence for you?
I would say my mom. Hmm. Honestly.
Shout out to moms.
Yeah, shout out to my mom. Single mom. She means everything to me still, you know? So yeah, that's my homie. I love her. But yeah, she showed me what resilience is, what faith is, what walking in your purpose is, what love is. She showed me all of that. And even to have confidence when you walk into a room, she showed me what that is and how to gain that, how to find that within yourself. So when you walk into the room with confidence, and you know that you're meant there for a reason, and it's not just by chance, you know? Mm-hmm. So she definitely gave me those fundamentals. And when I'm in those rooms by myself and I may feel uncomfortable, I always grasp back on those teachings that she gave me.
Mm.
Shout out to moms out there.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And I'm moved by what you just said about in those moments where you feel uncomfortable in a said room, because like I've been in those proverbial and physical rooms, and being centered by mm-hmm. family, like, oh my gosh, that I think that really resonates. I'm wondering, mm-hmm. did it take you time throughout your career to find that like level of peace? Because for me, it definitely took some time for sure.
It took me a while. Mm-hmm. It felt so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because it's the thing of like being the only person that looks like you in the room.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's this like kind of psychological warfare that I've experienced in these rooms by myself, where it's like, if I speak up, if I use my voice, is this going to be received the way that I intend it to be? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
over time, like, I've just had to get comfortable, being comfortable with using my voice and knowing that it's okay to share my opinion, especially when, you know, my intentions are pure. I have true intentions. I want to do a great job. I want to have the best project. I want to have an award-winning project. And I know by sharing this idea is going to really transform this project, you know? So just having that internal belief, having that confidence has been something that I've had to find, but it is truly amazing. It feels so good to finally be over the hump and to know that voice within is even better when you're able to express it outwardly.
I love that so much. And I think for me, like, hearing what you said reminded me of, like, early on in my career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is advice that I have for anybody listening who might feel similar to what we're discussing, is, like, you know, you said, like, leaning into the internal belief and confidence in yourself, but also, like, remembering the goal of, like, I want this piece to be great. I think for me early on, I would be like, is now do I, like, when do I chime in? Is now a good time to chime in? Is what I'm saying going to be loud enough? Are they going to think I'm, you know, like, you're overthinking what the other person is going to receive, to your point. Like, I think you use that word, receive. But I think there was a shift, I think, for me in my career where I was like, just say it, just say it, just say it, just do it, just do it. Just, like, rip the band-aid off. And so, I don't know, it just resonates.
Yeah. And for me also, like, to this day, like, I've never had a mentor in this field. So a lot of my learning has been trial and error, you know, because I don't have anyone else in my family that's a creative or in, like, the sports industry or any entertainment industry. So it's not like I was able to or have been able to, like, hey, I'm having this situation. Can you, like, let me know what I'm supposed to do? You know?
Yeah.
I really had to, give me feedback, anything. I've had to go into these meetings and, like you say, have that internal conversation with myself and say, I'm going to say it. if I don't say it right now, no one's going to bring it up.
Right.
And you're just like, you wait for that break and you're looking at the clock like, okay. Like, all right. So guys, I think we should actually consider this or this. And you're like, and then you're like waiting for that pen to drop. And then someone's like, you know what? Yeah, I agree with that. Thanks for bringing that up, Jazz. You know, and it's like this crazy, like, euphoric moment or like a Jimmy Neutron brain blast. Or, you know, like, you're just like, what? Yeah. So once I started to have those moments, I'm like, oh, this is nothing. Yeah, I got this.
So a couple things on that note. One, if you are ever interested in, you know, it's never too late for mentorship. So if you ever need any, Karina and I'm volunteering her because she's here.
Well, wait a minute, Darius. I have to confess something to Jazz here, because I was looking at my inbox and I searched your name and we exchanged emails like a while ago, but then I think we never synced up and connected, because I looked at my inbox. I'm like, oh my gosh, we did. Like, you had reached out. And I think this is such an interesting thing, because I do think it's hard. It's tough right now in the world of sports creativity.
Mm-hmm.
To find that mentor or to find somebody that you can A, trust, and B, share, like, some of the things that you might not be comfortable sharing in a, you know, private or a public setting rather. And Jazz, to your point of, like, not having family members to turn to, correct me if I'm wrong, but all of us in this space right now, are like, I'm Latina, Darius or Black, we're people of color, however we want to describe ourselves. And I didn't have that either. So like I would turn to my brother about certain scenarios and he would give me good advice. But sometimes it's like, it's different because he works in like the finance insurance business, like industry, and like creative is such a different world where there's so much subjectivity and sometimes favoritism, you know, depending on your workplace. So I'm curious, Jazz, in what we're talking about today, like how do you stand on business in those moments where like you feel like you can't or like you shouldn't, but you know, like deep down, like you're like, I'm gonna just say it. You know what I mean?
I just make for sure I have the facts to back it up. Like I'm coming in with a reason why I'm bringing up things, you know? I think that's what's really helped me is like, okay, I'm just tell you the reasons on how I got to this point, you know, of like why I'm saying this. And I think that really translates more. Because if you just rip off the Band-Aid, everyone's just going to look at you like, what's going on with her? Yeah. But like, but just like laying down the facts on and trying to also tie it into, hey, keeping the main thing, we all have the same goal here, always helps.
Right.
The justification for what you're suggesting, but also bringing it back to like the strategy and the goals that the team has. I love that.
And I want to make sure that I say this to both of you because I followed both of your careers. Karina, I've probably known you a little bit more. But both of you deserve to be in every room that you go in. Like, you deserve to be in there and you put in the work to be in those rooms. I've been in rooms with people who have not done anything. And that confidence doesn't, like, it's not foreign to them. They just say what they say. And a lot of times it's not even good. But, you know, good is subjective. But you all deserve to be in those rooms. And it's a heavier weight for women like you who go into these situations where you may be not only the only woman of color, you may be the only woman, or you may be the only person of color. And so you're holding up so much weight of something else that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with you. Like whether you're fighting for, oh, well, we shouldn't say this because it may be a little offensive to a vast majority of our fans, or maybe we shouldn't, you know, put this on there because that is not a good look for us. But if we going into these situations, if not you, it's never going to happen. But to Jazz's point is you can't go in there with 100. I'm objecting everything. Like you gotta have some fact behind it of like, hey, this may be a thing. Like I remember in situations where I covered women's basketball and would have conversations with players about they didn't have a voice, a lot of them, but they're like, hey, we don't like this. I'm like, okay, cool, let's talk about this. So that then if I raise that concern, it actually has some facts behind it. And then it's not just me saying, oh, well, we shouldn't be doing this because, you know, that's not like, okay, that's an is that an opinion or is that facts? So the two of you definitely deserve to be in those rooms, and you're both accomplished individuals who, you know, you put in the work. Like I've seen both of you, Jasmine. I remember seeing you at Pitt, like, you know, just following along the journey, right? Just seeing, I'm like, man, she's doing some good stuff. Like, because when I worked in college, I worked with Olympic sports. I was 10 years in and still covering Olympic sports because I liked doing it, not just because, well, this is all you're good enough to do. It's like, no, like those sports are even more exciting than what everybody else is ranting and raving. Like,
low key.
I've been around bad football teams that got more resources than great national championship level Olympic sports. That's just the nature of what, you know, college is. But like, keep doing keep doing the thing because you deserve to be in those rooms. And it's easy to say on my side, it's like, oh, you know, like I've been the only person in the room too. And yeah. had to find that voice to say, no, we're not doing this. Like I will stand on this table. I will flip it over. Like, we're not doing that because that is not what we're doing.
Don't flip it over because you know what they're going to say if you flip it over. Then it becomes a whole nother thing. But I know what you're saying.
But no, I have flipped the table over.
So maybe you should watch Real Housewives.
Episodes, you know? But no, like, and sometimes I'm saying that literally and figuratively, right? It's like sometimes you, is it worth it? Because sometimes it's bigger than you, the individual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. And
I know that that's not like, it's kind of frowned upon. It's like, oh no, you have to kind of, you know, tread lightly. No. If it's, no.
Mm-mm. It's interesting. It's interesting, Darius, because first of all, we appreciate the kind words. Yeah. I'm speaking for you, Jazz, but yes, we appreciate that. But at the same time, like at least for me as a woman, I'm like, I do have to tread lightly because I don't want in a certain environment, like there's a time and place for everything. Like Absolutely. Sometimes I've gotten into it with colleagues, you know, verbally because I feel very passionately about a specific idea or thing or process. But I do think as a woman, sometimes it's hard. You're almost like overthinking how the other person's going to receive it. Because for me, at least, I'm like, I don't want them to stereotype me and then think I'm this like spicy, you know, fiery Latina, whatever it is. Which, it's not bad. Like we got extra flavor, you know, and that kind of thing. But sometimes I think it's hard. And to me, it's a delicate balance. Jazz, I don't know your thoughts or if you feel that the same way.
Mm-hmm. I definitely feel that wholeheartedly. And I think that's why it took so long to like find my voice in certain rooms, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's like, if I say something, this could turn into something else, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just.
But your description of when you do speak up and it is like that your idea is like taken and then we're like turning and running with it as a team. That euphoria, like, oh, I have chills because it is such a great feeling. It's such a great feeling. The other thing I wanted to bring up as an aside, you know, we've talked about, you know, looking up to your mom and Candace Parker and, right, like these incredible women that are doing incredible things. But I also want to talk about you and more specifically, your website. Phenomenal.
Thank you.
For those listening, y'all need to go copy and paste her name into Google immediately and go to her website because it is just such a beautiful representation, I think, of your work and it is so cool. So I want to hear your thoughts on demo reels and how best to like present yourself in a space like a website, because for the creative industry, like so much, you need a reel, you need a portfolio to show. So walk us through how you built everything.
Yeah, my website, I'm so happy that it's cool to you because that is exactly the goal that I was going for.
I love it.
Is to give people a like the full scope of who I am as a creator. Cause you know, working in sports, you do everything, you know? And it's kind of like when people are just like, what are you most like passionate about or really good at? And like, I could do everything, you know, and not in a cocky way, but like,
but it's a fact.
It's a fact, honestly. So my whole goal with my website is like, okay, I'm going to open up with the heavy hitters. That's why you see like, four projects that I'm truly proud of. And then I start to break it off, you know, as you go deeper into the site. So that's the branded content. That's the sports content. I also have some photography on there. I have something else on there. Hold on. Now I'm looking at my website. One second.
It is an amazing website.
Yeah. Event recaps, just to give people a full scope of who I am as a creator. I also have a lot of descriptions on there to give people a deeper understanding of the thought processes that went behind it. Because I'm not just someone that can create an event recap and just think about videography only. No, I'm also shooting for the edit, and I know how to add effects in post that's really going to, you know, highlight certain moments. I'm really cool. I'm really good at sound effects, or I have some animated work on my website too. I want you to know I know my way around After Effects, and I could do it in this way, you know, relating to any project. So that was my main goal with it. The one thing I don't have on my site is a demo reel for like a specific thing, which I know in college they taught us to have a demo reel for everything. So in certain aspects, like if a client reaches out to me and just wants a specific reel for a certain thing, I could send that to them. Like I'll have it in my back stash, or if I'm trying to pitch myself to someone about a specific event, conference, wedding, whichever, I could send that to them. But on my website, I just really wanted to show the creative scope of who I truly am.
Yeah, I love it. It's so good. And I think there's so much conversation in the creative industry on like portfolio versus reel versus site. I just love how you encapsulate everything in your website, because to your point, right, depending on a client, if they are asking for a reel, you probably know that client and what vibe they're going for. So you're going to curate that reel specifically to them. And I think reels are great for like DPs and cinematographers, but because you're so multifaceted, it's almost to me of value. If I were hiring, I'd be like, oh, this is great. Like I'm seeing different types of content, your event recaps, your, you know, social content, maybe your in-game stuff. So just all that to say, amazing, amazing work.
Thank you.
And I think in your case, because you are so multifaceted, I mean, reels are a way to show it, but the way that you have everything broken down into like sessions, like, oh, do you want to edit? Cool. Go check out stuff that I've edited. Oh, you want to recap? Like you have an event, like, oh, this shows you. I don't need to go and see a reel that tries to force everything in there.
Yeah.
Because if you're not a person that knows what to look for in a reel.
Exactly.
A reel does you no good, right? So I do like how you have everything laid out very clear. You want photography. I've done photos. Here's some examples. Oh, you want this? Cool. It shows a lot of accomplishments. So,
And one other thing on that before we move on, I love how you list the roles for your video content because I've gotten some questions from like young people like, well, I edited this, but I didn't shoot it. Like, how do I convey this? I think you, again, folks listening, if you're working on something, like take notes from Jazz and run with it because it's so clear, like, you edited, you produce, you shot like on different pieces, because sometimes you might just be editing a piece. Sometimes you might be doing both or all. I love it. But Darius, continue what you were saying.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's awesome. It goes into accomplishments. We're all kind of accomplished. I'm not going to go there. Talk about some of your favorite accomplishments that you've, you know, kind of accumulated over time.
One of my favorite accomplishments in 2019, I was a part of the Pit Beyond the Script team, and we won an Emmy for that. That was one of my first awards ever. So that was pretty cool. Cause I'm one of those people that don't win a lot of things or have like trophies. So that was dope. And another accomplishment is creative directing the City Edition campaign this year. It was such a cool process. It was a project that definitely pushed me in more ways than one. I had to really think outside the box and understand how to just translate this message. And it's been a 2-year arc. So I worked on City Edition last year, and this year it closes out the Fly City Edition for the Hawks. So it's just been a really gratifying process of like copywriting, video production, editing, sound designing. So it's taught me so many things. I think that's also where a lot of my confidence has come over the last few years of working on something like that. And once you creative direct something and you actually see it executed, you just walk around a little differently, you know?
Yeah. Gives you a little edge.
Chin up, shoulders back,
you know?
Start skipping around.
Everything looks brighter, sunnier.
You know?
Yeah. You got that kind of like lean back walk.
A little gleam.
Yeah. I have a quick story about this because at one of my jobs, I got a promotion. And Jazz, to your point, I felt different. I felt great. I felt different, right? Then that the next day, right? You go to bed. I woke up and I heard the birds chirping. It was like beautiful outside. I was like, it's gonna be a great day. The joke was on me because the birds that were chirping was my alarm, not the actual birds outside. But I understand like when you accomplish something as a creative, and especially like you said, something like that, you probably don't have that many opportunities to do for like such a large campaign. City Edition, that's huge. Like, props to you. I mean, you should continue to, you know, walk chin up, shoulders back, because I love hearing that, and I love seeing people like you just winning. So
thank you.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah. A couple things. Yeah. It is Women's History Month. Yeah, you talked about your mom, you talked about Candace Parker, we've talked about you. How important is it for I'm gonna tell a story after this. But how important is it to have great women in your corner to inspire you, but also motivate you, but also to influence you, but also to like help navigate through, you know, life? Because life isn't always easy for everyone.
It's hard doing it by yourself. So when you have those supportive women in your corner that you can relate to and that understand you in a different way, it helps so much. You know, it's kind of like, you know, how they say you can't pour from an empty cup, you know. Mm-hmm. So for other people to pour into you, it can make a difference. You know, I've had those moments where I'm just sitting in an area by myself, and like a woman that works within an organization or whoever comes up to me and they just, hey, I see the work you're doing, like, I'm really proud of you, or keep going, or whatever. Like, they don't know, like, they just help me, like, come out of this, like, maybe not a dark moment, but like a low moment, or maybe I'm like having a rough day, or I'm not that confident. Yeah, like maybe a small funk, and they just like gave me life again, or, you know, just gave me that extra motivation, that push, that again. Because they not only saw you, they acknowledged you and they poured into you when they didn't have to. So it definitely means a lot to me. And when I have a chance to see other women doing amazing jobs, doing an amazing job, if it's not in sports and it's in a different industry, I give them their props, you know, because I know how much of a difference it's made for me.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So a few weeks ago, I don't know if it was me getting in my feelings or me just having a moment of appreciation. I think it was probably beginning of the month. So back when I was in college, some time ago, There was a young lady who was doing a job that I'd not seen happen before. You know, going back to the representation mm-hmm. of what you see, right? And it was the first time and possibly one of the only times I've ever seen a woman be a handheld operator. Mm. And I was mind blown. One, because I hadn't seen it, but she was a Black woman. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't going around asking for help with cases. And I mean, she was lugging. She was doing the thing. I was like so impressed. But then I was kind of like, dang, like we don't see this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was having a reflective moment to like, man, I haven't seen, her name is Beverly. I haven't seen her probably in 15 years. But I was like, if I saw her, I would thank her because she, and I've seen other like Black dudes and dudes just in general do all of these different roles, especially under the basket. Main camera, all of this, producing, all of this. Mm-hmm. But to see that one person doing something that was dang near impossible
mm-hmm.
opened up so much. Like you talk about, you know, walking with a little extra something in your step. Mm-hmm. Like,
it sticks with you. Yeah.
You know, I saw somebody yesterday ask the question to his kid from Duke. It was like, how big was the basket? Like the basket was as big as the Pacific Ocean for me because I saw that opportunity was wide open at that point. So shout out to Bev and all of the amazing mm-hmm. women who, you know, not only paved the way for other women, but, you know, for other people to show like, man, this industry can be a grind. It can be mm-hmm. nasty. It can be dirty. Like it can be disrespectful, but mm-hmm. still doing it head high. You know, 150,000% authentic at that.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to yeah. all of you.
And I would say something really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
While I was working at Pitt, my dream was to always work in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna get there. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the end? Whatever, right? Yeah. I'm like scrolling. And I saw a picture of Karina. No. Filming a player.
Aww.
Right? And I was like, oh.
And then you sent her a DM and she didn't answer. Okay.
No. When you sent the email thing, I had to think back and I'm like, yes, that was you. Because I'm like, I saw this picture and I was like, oh, she could do it. Or she's doing it. That means I could do it too.
I can. Oh my gosh.
And it was like working in college athletics is so much to the people who don't know. Like,
and you never see the light at the end of the tunnel.
You really don't. Us, right? So that was really like my like guiding light in a way of like I can get out of college athletics. Like, there's another stage to get to. Like, you can make your way into the NBA. So yeah, I appreciate you. Yeah, I appreciate you. I don't know who took that photo. I don't know if it's even online anymore, but I saw that photo and I was like, I could do it.
I appreciate that. And I think
emotion.
Yeah, like I think what Darius and both of you have just said, it's like that it like sticks with you. Like it hits different. I feel like as you know, insert identity, whatever you know, are like insert identity and then who you are. I think when you see people that look similar or have been doing what you want to do, it resonates so much. So I appreciate that so much. And I'm just thrilled that you are where you are, and I can't wait to see what you continue to do because you are breaking barriers, whether you realize it or not. I think all of us are in our own unique way. So, it's amazing. I want to quickly pivot, though, really quickly to keep things a little bit lighter. So we're going to shift to a little game that we
have
do
a little fun.
With with our guests.
I like
this
like
has been an amazing conversation, by the way. Absolutely. Like I've just it's been filling my cup.
Hey.
But we are gonna play a game where you've got 30 seconds to list off as many things in your hypothetical tool bag, toolkit, backpack, whatever you want to call it. They can be things, they can be people, they can be places, objects, programs, resources, simple, complex, whatever you want to list. But the goal is to list as many as possible.
Oh, she had and to take the glasses off.
She had to take the glasses off.
Do I already know the topic? Have you...
So the topic is anything that helps you in your day-to-day work.
Like, what are you putting in your tool bag?
Yep.
Must-haves.
Right. And it can be objects. It can be people. Be
a drink. Everything.
Yep. Anything. So you've got 30 seconds.
We'll give you a five-second buffer to kind of think about it.
Yeah.
We usually don't. We usually just jump right in, but that gives Karina time to set the clock. Get you time to let your shoulders back a little bit to get loose,
you know.
But we're gonna start in 3, 2, 1, go.
Tea, candles, perfume,
okay,
editing, storytelling, okay. Videography,
okay.
Now say tea. Oh my god.
Six.
This drink right here, my glasses, hard drive, okay. Screen, okay. MacBook, okay. Music.
Okay.
Feeling good, looking good.
Okay, 13.
I love it.
Okay, 14. Okay, that may be. That
I was throwing out anything I could see.
You're like, feeling good. We got to.
Looking good.
Listen, I loved the perfume. That was my favorite because I work from home a lot, but I'm by myself, but I will put perfume on it because I think it makes a difference. I love that list.
I'm into aromatherapy. Mm. So I'm that person who like goes to the store and like smells all the candles. Yep. I'm curious. I just want to see what it smells like. And if it smells good enough, I'm gonna buy it 9 times out of 10. But yes, I'm into aromatherapy.
9 times out of 10.
Yeah. I love it.
All right, so not to get back too lighthearted, but we like to give back on the show. As you know, we've had people who have tons of experience in this creative industry, very little experience, you know, whatever the case may be, in between. What advice do you give, not only just to young women who are looking to get in, but younger, the next generation of creatives looking to get into this industry who may think that they graduate today and go into an industry, but what's the best advice that you can give them to help them navigate their journey to get to where they're trying to go?
The thing that's helped me the most, and I would say for younger producers to use as their like internal guiding light kind of, is to just be comfortable being uncomfortable. I feel like my entire journey has just been based in that. And a lot of those uncomfortable moments have taught me a lot, not only about myself, but how to be a better producer, how to be a better creative. A lot of beautiful things come out of discomfort, which could just be learning a new skill set. You know, the first time I opened Premiere and After Effects, I was uncomfortable. I didn't know what I was looking at. But out of that, I taught myself how to use those programs, or learning how to use my voice in rooms that I wasn't the most comfortable in. When I finally learned how to use my voice, these rooms feel way comfortable now, and I feel more comfortable in them. So you'll find your way through those uncomfortable moments. You just have to keep pushing through them. And the other side is truly amazing and beautiful. You just have to find your way to it. It truly is. And now some of my favorite projects are the ones where I was uncomfortable the most because I've learned some things or I was able to try something different. So it helps, believe it or not.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.